Welcome, I'm Holly Cronin, and this is Your Call. It must be a cold day in hell. The cow jumped over the moon, and pigs are flying somewhere. Those are the words Republican Assemblyman Brian Nistande of Palm Desert used to describe Assembly Bill 2372 at a committee hearing a few weeks ago. Why? Because AB 2372 seems to have accomplished what has long been deemed politically impossible, a bipartisan coalition in favor of reforming California's Prop 13. Proposition 13 is the famous 1978 amendment to California's Constitution that put a cap on home and commercial property taxes in the state and required a two-thirds majority vote in the legislature to pass any further changes to tax law. Prop 13 came at a time when home values were skyrocketing, and so in turn were property taxes. But while voters were concerned about individual property taxes, most didn't understand that the proposition also capped commercial property taxes. Critics of Prop 13 say this has led to an enormous loss of revenue for the state over the last 3.5 decades, and it's had a huge impact on public education and social services. But AB 2372 may have put a crack in what for decades seemed like an unbreakable wall against changes in taxation. By narrowly focusing on fixing the commercial property tax loophole, the bill's author, Democratic Assemblymember Tom Amiano, has succeeded in getting bipartisan support for a bill to reform Prop 13. Maybe the biggest surprise is that the very anti-tax group that designed and pushed through Prop 13 back in 1978 says it now will not actively oppose AB 2372. Quote, "I think that the withdrawal of our opposition, at least for now, suggests that we don't see this as a direct threat to Prop 13, unquote, said the president of the Jarvis Group. So could this be true reform? Does AB 2372 go far enough? Could the promise of altering Prop 13 be a game changer for California? Well, joining us to discuss all of this, we have Lenny Goldberg, who's the executive director of the California Tax Reform Association and owner of a public interest lobbying firm, Lenny Goldberg and Associates. He's been involved with major tax legislation and tax initiative campaigns in California for the past 25 years. He's on the board of Citizens for Tax Justice in Washington, D.C., and has published extensively on tax policy, especially on reforming Prop 13. Hi, Lenny.
Hi, Holly.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and that was an excellent description of Prop 13 and what's happened since.
Well, thanks. We're going to delve more into that, and I'll ask you about that in just a minute. Let me also introduce and welcome Ben Grief, who's campaign director and spokesperson for Evolve, a community organization of Bay Area activists taking on political issues like health care reform and California's perennial budget problems. And Evolve has been actively pushing for Prop 13 reform for several years now. Hi, Ben.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Well, thanks for joining us, both of you. Let me start with you, Lenny. So I gave a brief description of Prop 13, but for anybody who may not have been around in 1978 when it was passed and knows about some of the effects but doesn't understand the minutiae of it, can you just describe what Prop 13 did and does?
I will, and it turns out from some recent polling we've done that a lot of young people don't even know the phrase Prop 13. So Prop 13 was the harbinger of the anti-tax movement in 1978, and as you described, it happened because there was inflation in home values, people's incomes weren't rising, and there was an effort in the legislature under then-Governor Jerry Brown to try to deal with property tax relief for homeowners. That legislative effort failed for a variety of reasons, and then Howard Jarvis taxpayers went to the ballot, took this measure, which is very extreme in its effects. It limits the rate of property taxation to 1%, and in the past you had cities and counties and school districts adding on to the rate, and then it got slashed from about 2.5% to 1%. It also, and you mentioned this, put a two-thirds vote in the legislature for new taxes and what became interpreted as a two-thirds vote for many new taxes at the local level. And as a result, it has really, there were many billions of dollars in tax cuts from Prop 13 in property taxes, but it also really hindered the state or local governments from making up from some of those losses and but because of the two-thirds vote requirement. So as a result, as you said, education went from relatively high in the country to relatively low in the country. We have huge infrastructure problems, and a lot of power has been centralized in Sacramento as opposed to allowed to be at the local level because it puts such a restriction on the ability to raise property taxes. The big thing it did, though, as well, and all of those are very significant, was it put the same rules for homeowners onto commercial property. And, you know, that's when the property changes ownership, it gets reassessed at market value. Well, that works for homeowners, and you've seen rising property taxes from homeowners as homes turn over. But it does not work for commercial property, and I'm sure we'll get into that more.
Well, and that's what AB 2372 seeks to address. And let me just take these three kind of components of Prop 13 each individually: the individual property tax, the effect on commercial property, and the two-thirds vote to raise any new taxes. So Prop 13 was in response to a real problem that was happening in the state, which is that especially elderly people, people on fixed incomes who owned property, were being assessed these high rates based on the value of their property, despite the fact that their income may not be rising if they stay in their house, right?
That's correct. But, you know, virtually every state that has rising property values like California and the major and big industrial states have means of protecting homeowners. And the legislature in 77-78, before Prop 13, was trying to pass some means of protecting homeowners that were really very effective. But that all failed in the legislature. Jerry Brown was part of that failure, I'm sorry to say. And as a result, what we got was a much more extreme way of protecting homeowners than exists in other states. And we could have done that without all these other parts of the anti-tax piece, which include protecting commercial property so that the property tax burden has shifted dramatically to residential property and away from commercial property. And we certainly could have done that without the two-thirds vote requirement, which has protected every special interest corporation and loophole in the state.
That's what's kind of interesting to me about delving into the history of Prop 13, though, is we got this kind of radical reform that was purportedly in response to a real problem, but that the legislature did not address. Why was the legislature so unable to address that real problem?
Well, they were very close to addressing it at the end of the session, and you know, there are many different interpretations of that, but, you know, the governor walked away from it and did not get the votes that he could have gotten. Other people interpreted it differently. One of the senators from San Francisco, Milton Marks, was a key vote, refusing to vote for some kind of property tax reform, and as a result, we got this radical reform.
Well, and I'll move on to the other two components and bring Ben into this. I just wanted to read a letter to the editor that Quentin Kopp, former state senator, former supervisor here in San Francisco, wrote in today's San Francisco Chronicle. He wrote that he does support AB 2372, by the way, but he said that before Proposition 13, homeowners subsiding on fixed incomes or retired or earning wages were taxed increasingly every year on a non-cash asset which produced no income unless or until it was sold. The assessed value of their homes produced nothing by way of income to the property tax-paying owner. It was unfair. People finally got fed up, and Proposition 13 has benefited rationally those homeowners and their families. So just one question to both of you. Do you think that the piece of Prop 13 that protects individual property homeowners is a rational reform?
So from our organizational perspective, Prop 13 was meant to protect people and homeowners, and it should remain in place to protect, you know, people and homeowners. It's very popular in California. It was passed by a wide margin. But what people didn't realize, and what Lenny was mentioning earlier, is that it also covers commercial property.
Yeah, so let's talk about how it covers commercial properties, and then we can get into the nitty-gritty of what 2372 would potentially do, which is just a tiny piece of what the effects on commercial property are. So, Ben, why don't you talk about how Prop 13 has affected commercial property taxes and how that's affected state revenue?
Sure. So the interesting thing about Prop 13, although it was supposed to protect homeowners, what we've seen is a dramatic shift in the property tax burden towards residential property away from commercial property. In 1978, homeowners shouldered 60% of the property tax burden, and 40% of the burden fell on commercial property owners. Today, that burden has widened the gap. It's now 72% of the property tax money in California is coming from homeowners, while only 28% is coming from these large commercial property taxes. And that's simply because big commercial properties rarely, if ever, change hands. And one of the big examples of this is Disneyland. Unless Disneyland decides to sell its theme park, they are going to be paying 1975 levels of property taxes for the end of time. Meanwhile, California homeowners, our homes change hands on average every 10 years. And so there's a reassessment going on about every 10 years. And this is not going to happen with the larger commercial properties. And what that's done to our state budget has been really terrible. We're now 49th in the nation in education funding. And not only are we struggling to fund our schools and our public services, but it's also dramatically increased the tax burden on individuals and working families. Because we don't have stable, reliable revenue coming in from these large commercial properties, like Lenny mentioned, pretty much every other state in the country does, we now have the highest income and the highest sales tax in the country. And we are constantly asking voters to pay more and more every year in the form of fees and parcel taxes and bond measures just to keep up, you know, our schools and public services, which are still underfunded. What we seriously need to do is have regular reassessment of these large commercial properties so we can bring in anywhere from $6 to $10 billion a year of really stable revenue that would help our state fund a number of things, including our schools.
That's Ben Grief. He's campaign director and spokesperson for Evolve, a community organization of Bay Area activists pushing for Prop 13 reform. We're also joined by Lenny Goldberg, who's executive director of the California Tax Reform Association, and he's on the board of Citizens for Tax Justice in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about the effects of Prop 13 on California and the prospects for reforming the 1978 constitutional amendment. What would you like to see changed about Prop 13, and what do you think has been positive for the state? Also, if you're somebody who remembers the Golden State before Proposition 13, let us know about your experiences. 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. Again, that's 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Ben and Lenny, some people say that Prop 13 essentially kicked off the Reagan Revolution, and for 35 years now, Prop 13 has in effect shaped California's politics and economics. Can you talk about, maybe let's start with you, Ben, some of the impacts Prop 13 has had on the budget? And you mentioned kind of in passing on public education, but really what, how it's reshaped the budget in California?
Sure. So Prop 13, or before Prop 13, our schools were funded, and they're funded in the rest of the country through property taxes. And when we had these large commercial property owners stop paying their fair share of property taxes, that dramatically reduced the amount of funding that we had for our schools. So since Prop 13 was passed, we've had a number of sort of stopgap measures, a number of workarounds to try to fund our schools. We had Prop 98, which was passed, that stipulates that nearly 40% of any revenue coming into the state general fund needs to go to our schools because we didn't have the funds for education anymore. And this was is something that was an unintended consequence of Prop 13. Again, something that was supposed to protect homeowners actually really hurts a lot of folks who go to our schools and public services. It hurts a lot of folks who have to pay increased taxes and fees just to make ends meet at their local or county level. What we see right now is a huge opportunity at a time when, like I mentioned, we are paying the highest income and sales tax in the country. We are ranked near the bottom in education funding in the country, where enough people realize enough is enough. You know, it's finally time to take a second look at Prop 13 and simply reform it to maintain protections for residential properties, but to finally start making these large commercial property owners pay their fair share.
And just to point out, California Public Schools ranked number one nationally in student achievement in the 1960s. We're down near the bottom nowadays. We got an email from Claudia in El Sobrante who says, I was part of a group which included San Francisco Supervisor Harvey Milk organizing against passage of this proposition. We predicted correctly that the property tax reductions would gut the public school system and close down half the affordable preschools and or kindergartens in the city, sending working mothers back onto welfare. Please check the rankings for California schools as compared to the rest of the nation before and after passage of this proposition, and you'll see what I mean. Although Prop 13 was presented as protection for homeowners, including the elderly, it was written in a way that created huge tax reductions for all property owners, including Bank of America. That's from Claudia in El Sobrante. Thank you for that. Lenny, another effect of Prop 13, and I believe that's coupled with a court case called Serrano versus Priest, was giving a lot more control over finances to the state and a lot less to local governments. So can you explain what effect this had on local communities and local schools?
Sure. At the, you know, one of the things that everyone agree, pretty much everyone agrees on is that power has been centralized in Sacramento. And one reason for that is that it used to be that the school system would have, school district would have a rate, the city and the county, they would assess property, and the average rate of property tax assessment, which is similar to what it was, what it is around the country, was more like 2 or 2.5%. Well, when you knock it down to 1%, and then the, what happens is that Sacramento has to say, okay, we're going to divide up and say who gets the property tax. So they did that first based on historical shares, but that didn't make a lot of sense. Then they shifted money away from cities and counties to schools in order to bail out the state budget because they didn't provide any more money to schools. And so what happens is that Sacramento basically mixes the pot that says who gets what, because local governments cannot control their own property tax rate. And so, you know, there's small, very small override. So that takes away all the power for taxing from cities, counties, and schools. The other thing it did on the two-thirds vote requirement, it said we needed votes of the people, not vote. You no longer can a board of supervisors or a city council or a school board say, you know, we need these taxes, we have to pass them. We have to go to the vote of the people. And that was interpreted by the courts to generally, for the most part, for schools, for transportation, for police, anything that said where you wanted the money to go would be a two-thirds vote requirement, and meaning that a tax decision was two votes yes for one vote no. And Ben is absolutely right to emphasize the amount of what cities have done more than counties, which are, don't have as much authority, is every kind of fee and administrative tax and every little thing that they can get, bring money in, which falls on ordinary people because they cannot really get much of a property tax anymore.
Well, and Ben said, called this, you know, some unintended consequences in terms of looking at the history of this. Were these intended consequences? I mean, these were pretty radical reformers.
Yeah, it was very clear that that on the two-thirds vote that they not only said, we don't want you going in the property, we want to protect homeowners, that's what they called it, but we really don't want you taxing at all. And when you asked your previous question, didn't this lead to the Reagan Revolution and the anti-tax movement? Absolutely it did. It was set up to do that. It wasn't just protect homeowners, because the legislature and Jerry Brown should have been able to do that. Instead, it created the basis for anti-tax, which is the one thing that keeps in California, it kept the Republican Party together forever, with some exceptions during Pete Wilson and Schwarzenegger's era. But for the most part, it was no taxes, no taxes, no taxes. And the Republicans could enforce that because they had a two-thirds vote requirement, because of the two-thirds vote requirement. So we've seen an erosion particularly, and this is unfortunate because my job was to kind of protect the tax base, an erosion of the corporation tax significantly because of the two-thirds vote requirement. And in budget times, when you had a two-thirds vote, they would say, let's do a big corporate tax if we're going to do anything else. so corporate tax cut. And so those that has eroded much of the tax base, the two-thirds vote of the state, and at the local level, it's taken away the power of local elected officials to, even when their voters agree with that, to pass any taxes.
And that's Lenny Goldberg, Executive Director of the California Tax Reform Association. We're also talking with Ben Grief, Campaign Director and Spokesperson for Evolve, which is a community organization of Bay Area activists pushing for Prop 13 reform, which is what we're talking about on today's Your Call, the prospects of reform for Prop 13. I'm Holly Kernan, and let's talk. We have a full bank of callers. I'm going to get to you as soon as we can. But can you explain, Ben, what AB, this is Tom Almiano's Assembly Bill 2372. It cleared the Assembly. It'll go before the Senate. It specifically closes a tiny loophole, a tax loophole for commercial property. Explain what AB 2372 would do.
Sure. Well, I will actually defer to Lenny on explaining the details of that. That's a bill that he's worked on for a number of years.
Then let me go to Lenny with that, Ben, just because we're coming up against a break. Go ahead, Lenny.
Sure.
Just explain
sure.
the minutia.
You know, the not really minutia. One of the things we find is that even if 100% of a property changes ownership, it is often not really, that's a change of ownership, right? Well, not if you have three owners and nobody takes more than 50 plus 1%. It gets a little complicated. But basically, you see properties changing hands fully and not being reassessed the way a homeowner or a home would be reassessed when it changed hands. So it's a major, it's a big loophole, although, you know, as we talk about this more, AB 20, Tom Almiano needs to be congratulated for raising this issue. He carried this bill for a number of years. The business community stonewalled it. But the reason it's passing now, and it has been watered down and made even weaker, which is really a problem, and we can talk about that some more, but the reason it passed now is because of groups like Ben's group, Evolve, because of organizations, community organizations, because of a growing movement to reform the commercial property tax. That growing movement let the business guys who stonewalled completely for many, many years say, oh, well, let's embrace the Almiano bill, but let's water it down a little, even a little more. So there are, you know, it's very, we're very happy that this discussion and this issue has been opened, but there's a long way to go to make sure that this bill works very well. And the one other thing I'd say, you raised Quentin Kopp. He had a much more comprehensive bill when he was state senator in the 1990s and said, and didn't get opposition from the Howard Jarvis people. He said, this is going to just change commercial property, and you guys should be just about protecting residential. And he got agreement on that. At this point, if there's anything stronger in this bill, and there must be, it needs to be done in the Senate, we expect that the Jarvis people and the business guys will oppose it. But right now, the bill closes this egregious loophole, but it doesn't quite get there yet. It doesn't get there yet, and so there's a lot of work that still needs to
be. And we have a lot of callers on the line. We're talking about the prospects for reform of Prop 13. You just heard from Lenny Goldberg, who's Executive Director of Californians for Tax Reform. Ben Grief is Campaign Director for Evolve. And Tom Almiano's AB 2372 would close this corporate loophole that we'll explain a little bit more after our short break. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we'll be right back after we take a short break.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio KALW. To join in today's conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-TALK. 866-798-8255. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, BBC's World Have Your Say. Today, the legacy of Tiananmen Square. There's intensive security clampdowns and media blackouts for this year's 25th anniversary of the crackdown on students in Tiananmen Square. We'll hear from people who took part in the protest, journalists who reported and covered the square in 1989, and from the generation born post-Tiananmen. That's your, World Have Your Say, coming up in 30 minutes at 11, here on KALW San Francisco.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. Tomorrow, we'll talk about how men can speak out against misogyny. What are the most effective ways for men and boys to relate to women as equals? And when men speak out against sexism and violence against women, how do other men react? On Friday, it's our weekly media roundtable where we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. Today, we're asking the question, is it time to reform Prop 13? We're talking about legislative proposals to reform the constitutional amendment from 1978 that put a cap on home and commercial property taxes in the state. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle are supporting a new bill that would close the commercial tax loophole. The Howard Jarvis Anti-Tax Group also says it will not oppose the bill. So could this be a game changer for California? We're joined by Lenny Goldberg, who's executive director of the California Tax Reform Association, and he's on the board of Citizens for Tax Justice in Washington, D.C., and Ben Grief is campaign director and spokesperson for Evolve, which is a community organization of Bay Area activists pushing for Prop 13 reform. Gentlemen, I want to get to as many callers as we can because we've got so many people who want to talk to you. But just to clarify, Tom Amiano's bill, AB 2372, Lenny was explaining it, what it would do a little bit before the break. Let me read from the LA Times. The legislation would curb businesses' ability to divvy up stakes in commercial property purchases so nobody has a majority ownership. Essentially, if they want to sell it, they create a shell corporation of more than one person, usually four or five people, so that nobody has a majority stake. So this maneuver avoids triggering a reassessment of the property that can increase its taxes. And the LA Times writes, the loophole gained notoriety from the 2006 sale of Santa Monica's Fairmont Miramar Hotel to computer magnate Michael Dell. Dell split ownership shares among his wife and two business partners, with no one taking on more than 49% of the property. That move saved him about $1 million a year in property taxes. So before I go to callers, is there anything you want to add? And we'll get into the pros and cons and how this bill was watered down after we take some calls, Lenny and Ben.
It's a symbol, but the problem is much deeper than this bill goes, and it's only there are many, many ways in which people can avoid reassessment, and when we talk about how it's watered down, one of the problems with it is that example of the purchase of the Dell of the Fairmont Miramar in L.A. would not be picked up by this bill because it only covers going forward. So as a result, rather than saying if you've used this loophole, you have to be reassessed, which is critically important, what it says instead is, okay, now going forward, you're going to have to find different loopholes to use.
And let's go to some of the callers. Ted in Palo Alto, welcome to your call. Hi, Ted. Are you with us? Okay, I'm going to move to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to your call.
Good morning. This is very, very good news. It's a long time coming, and we shouldn't miss this opportunity. I'd like to know what your guests think of the bill's chances in the Senate, and doesn't the issue have to eventually go before the voters? Because it was Proposition 13, obviously, was an initiative to begin with.
And a constitutional amendment.
Right.
Now, here's the issue. The bill amends in 1979. The legislature tried to figure out how to set up rules in statute about change of ownership for what they call legal entities or businesses rather than homeowners. And in doing so, they poked all. It made it very easy to avoid reassessment. There is all kinds of ways of holding property and passing it along where you don't have to be reassessed, and that's happened for a generation, basically, since 1979. So this bill does not affect the Constitution. It affects the interpretations of the Constitution that the legislature put into effect. That said, by closing this one loophole, it does not, and I'm, you know, I've sponsored this bill. Tom Amiano has done a great job, but enforceability is a problem. Going forward is a problem. It doesn't really deal with the loopholes. Quentin Kopp in the 1990s, then senator from San Francisco, had a much more comprehensive approach than this bill, although that failed at the time as well. And my view is that as the bill moves to the Senate, it will be important to make sure that it really works and that it doesn't just swap out one loophole for some others. And that involves taking a more comprehensive approach to the law. Now, if we do that, I believe the two-thirds vote goes away, that the business community says, oh, we're not going to get the Republicans on board. There are three senators missing for various corruption and indictment reasons. And as a result, if we have a real bill that actually accomplishes something, and again, I don't mean to diminish from Tom Amiano's efforts, but it has been watered down, made more difficult to enforce. It only covers properties going forward, so it doesn't pick up all those who used the loophole in the past. And we can either do more comprehensive reform in the legislature, or much simpler, eventually, if we were to do this, it is necessary to go to the ballot and say non-residential property shall be periodically reassessed at market value. And the reason for that is, here's an example. We're looking at Chevron property. Ben mentioned Disneyland. Chevron, as a major corporation, has owned a lot of its property since 1975. Its gas stations are assessed at much less than its competitors. Its refineries are assessed at less than its competitors. And as a result, it will always be locked in at 1975 values because its stock changes ownership all the time. But, you know, you don't go out there counting shares of stock and say, oh, there's 50 plus 1%, although Quentin Kopp's bill tried to do that. But, you know, we'll look at maybe we can pick up some more properties, or they'll find new loopholes to use as a result of the Amiano bill in its current form, not in how it could be made stronger. But companies like Chevron will never be reassessed. The companies that don't change ownership, that are publicly traded corporations, will find themselves never reassessed. And that makes the system, continues the unfairness of the system until you get a reform that says, you know, we ought to be looking at taxing commercial property at market value. Another reason for that that differs from homeowners, of course, is that homeowners, as I think was mentioned earlier, they're not making money from their property. They're just living there. But commercial property is investment property. And as the value goes up, you make more money. But you still don't pay more taxes. So we're finding that the land values in particular are extremely low. Buildings get reassessed when they get improved, but the land values are incredibly low, and that makes no sense at all. It's actually the opposite of what's good for the economy. You should be taxing land and not taxing new investment as heavily as we do.
And Ben, you're working on bringing an initiative before California voters of the type that Lenny just mentioned.
Right, and I would also just like to mention that not only are we the only state in the country that has a Prop 13 after 36 years, but also that the latest Public Policy Institute of California poll that came out this year shows that 59% of likely voters do support a reform that Lenny and I are talking about, a regular reassessment of non-residential commercial property. And it's because it's common sense. It just makes sense. And if we're talking about the future of California, if we believe in funding our schools and our public services, we must reform Prop 13. And what our organization is working to do is to build that groundswell of public support across the state, showing folks up in Sacramento that Californians really do believe it is finally time to reform Prop 13. And specifically, what we've been focused on over the last year is reaching out to school boards and city councils. And Lenny mentioned earlier, Prop 13 has really hampered local entities' ability to raise funds for their schools and public services. And we've reached out to them, and we say, can you send a message to Sacramento saying that enough is enough, we finally need to reform Prop 13? And so far, we have 73 school boards and city councils from San Diego up to Eureka that have all now gone on record. They've passed a resolution calling for Prop 13 reform of the commercial side of it. And this is really letting folks know that this is something that doesn't have to be the third rail anymore. This is something that we finally need to do. And we're very excited. Just yesterday, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors unanimously passed our resolution So they mentioned they support Ammiano's bill. They think that's great. But it is just the tip of the iceberg. For real reform, if we're really serious about funding the things that we all care about in California, we must have regular reassessment of commercial property.
Ben Grief is campaign director and spokesperson for Evolve, a community organization of Bay Area activists pushing for Prop 13 reform. We're also joined by Lenny Goldberg, who's executive director of the California Tax Reform Association. And we're talking about the effects of Prop 13 on California and the prospects of reforming the 1978 initiative, especially with respect to commercial property taxes. And let's go to another caller. Let's go to Troy in San Jose. Hi, Troy. Welcome to your call.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I know you guys are focusing on the commercial side of Prop 13, but I think it's important to note some of the impacts, unintended consequences on residential property. You guys were talking earlier about the shifting of the tax burden, and what's really happened is not just a shifting of the tax burden from commercial to residential, but more particularly from commercial to residential and from residential to those who bought properties, particularly in the last 10 years when property prices have gone up considerably. So those of us that have bought houses recently are bearing an undue portion of the property tax burden. What's more is that what we've had because of Prop 13 is that Prop 13 acts as something like a rent control. It depresses the amount of houses that come up on the market, and in a way helps to increase the price that new owners have to pay and makes housing much more unaffordable than it ought to be here in California.
Do you want to? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think your analysis is correct. It pushes up the price of land and residential property because people will hold on to their low assessments and not move as quickly, and so there are fewer houses on the market as a result. You're correct about the disparities between those who bought recently and those who haven't. But here's one of the reasons Prop 13 has been popular among homeowners. If you bought your house in the last 10 years and you stay there, this year, you know, recently your assessments are much higher than your neighbors, and that seems quite unfair. But if you hold on to your property for 10 or 20 years, your neighbors are going to pay much higher assessments than you are, assuming the markets keep going up. So what happens is that people feel locked in, and they say, this isn't fair, until 10 years later, if they're staying in their home, it is. So that just explains the popularity and why people look beyond the I bought my house last in 1993, and it was a much higher assessment than my neighbors. But now, since houses have turned over, it's a much lower assessment than my neighbors. So it's not a great system, for sure, but it's. I'm just trying to explain the popularity on the residential side, because you'll find if you stay in your home that you bought recently that your property tax will be, at least it'll be stable, and then you'll be paying, you know, more now and less than your neighbors later as property turns over.
And two relevant emails. Denise from San Francisco writes, another flaw in Prop 13 that is not being addressed is the tax rates between new owners of property and those who have lived in their property a long time. A neighbor who bought the exact same building 2 years ago pays 10 times more tax than her neighbor. Vivian writes, what bothers me most about Prop 13 is the ability to pass on the lower tax basis to those who inherit the property after death. It seems to me the property is changing hands at that time and should be reassessed. Descendants could refinance or sell. Is my understanding correct? I don't think it is. Yeah, go ahead.
That is correct. Parent-to-child transfer was an amendment that went into the Constitution to Prop 13 that says you can pass it on to your child and keep that same assessment. That is correct.
To your child or to all descendants?
No. Well, then your child can pass it to their children. It turns out, though, that that's a very small portion of the residential roll. It's like 1% or 2%. But on the commercial side, this is what happens. You set up a trust, and many, many commercial properties are owned in trust. And you have multi-million dollar commercial properties that gets passed down parent to child, the or from one member of the trust to the next member of the trust who then passes it on. And we've seen that. Some of the Silicon Valley really high-value properties that are leased by companies like Google are actually in family trusts that have gotten passed down year after year after year. And that, so she's right about the parent-child part of it because it keeps these low assessments for certain properties, but it's relatively small in residential. It's a major abuse that the Ammiano bill doesn't touch in commercial property where you can pass down millions of dollars worth of property without it being reassessed.
And let's go to
Let me, I'd like to quickly add, if we're Prop 13, there's many facets of Prop 13, but really, if we're talking about unfairness of Prop 13, we have to talk about the fact that Chevron alone is saving nearly $1 billion from this. And that's $1 billion that should be going back to our schools and public services. And I think that's what we have to continue to focus on. You know, Prop 13, like I said, many facets, but it's really the commercial side, the Walt Disney Corporations, the Chevron, the Michael Dells. Those are the people that we really need to have pay their fair share, because it certainly is increasing the tax burden on individuals and working families as long as we have as long as we don't regularly reassess commercial property.
And let me invite listeners to join our conversation about Prop 13 and prospects of reform for it, the effects that it's had on the state, on individual property owners, on commercial property owners, and how we might change or reform it. The number is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also drop us email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Carmel in Santa Cruz. Hi, Carmel.
Yes, I have two comments, one on the residential and one on commercial. I'll do the commercial first. On the commercial, when you raise the property taxes, and they need to be reassessed, what'll happen is we are taxed so heavily in this state for businesses. I don't see how businesses will make it here due to the fact they're moving out anyway. Most of my children are self-employed, and what they pay in taxes, they are taxed to the hilt. They bring a little bit home after all the things that they have to pay for. There's federal, there's state, and there's county, or if they're in the city, there's city taxes. So you would have to make it where maybe some of these other taxes would have to be lowered or eliminated, or how is anybody going to do a business in this state?
Well,
so,
yeah, go ahead. Let's let Lenny or Ben respond to you and try and sell reform.
Here's one of the interesting things. About many businesses, probably two-thirds of them are paying the full market value of property right now. The 1% rate limit is a limit that is lower than most other states, and yet the businesses buy properties, they use properties, a lot of it, some of it turns over. It turns out that most of the value are from those properties that are held prior to 1990. So if you had a reform that said, let's reassess property to market value, you would find that most businesses would not even be affected, many, probably the majority. But then there are huge landholders and huge properties that have not been reassessed since 1975. So you would not be, and you look at small businesses, I've looked a lot at a variety of small businesses, and they're paying a lot more in many cases than their neighbors are. So in that sense, this is a question of unfairness among business, not and a major cost to cities, counties, and schools. I've talked to property owners that have said, well, if this is going in my city and it's police and fire and infrastructure and roads, I can see paying it. That would be fair. So I also think there may be some other issues, like for small business, the business personal property tax, which taxes all their new equipment but doesn't tax the land of the owners of the land, would be a potential trade-off. You know, when we look at the overall levels of taxation, Ben mentioned this earlier, you have a lot of fees and all kinds of exactions at the local level to make up for the lack of property tax that's coming in from business.
And let's go to Robin in Redwood City. Hi, Robin. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you. I've been a property owner in California. My mother was a property owner back in the 50s, and I'm also a high school teacher. And I think there are a couple of when people say that our schools aren't being funded and that we're in the bottom of the ranking, I think you have to consider more aspects to this dynamic evolution of our school system. Back in the 60s and 70s, you're comparing our rating. There were maybe you had one or two people in the high school who didn't speak English. The last year I taught high school in the Sacramento area, I had 17 different languages in my classroom. So our immigration of different cultures and different languages severely affects how our students test out on these scores. You have to factor in that in the middle of Nebraska, in the middle of Colorado, you don't have that kind of dynamic that you'll find on the East Coast or the West Coast. So remember that whenever someone is comparing California, we have the most languages of any state in the
world. I agree with
you. Lenny, I'll feel that. You definitely bring up some good points. I think when we're talking about where California ranks in terms of education funding, we're talking about per student based on other states. And this is just funding coming in, we're in the bottom five. And it doesn't have anything to do really with, you know, who is speaking what language. It's just we're not funding our schools the way that other states are. You know, we're around $10,000 per student. A state like Wyoming is giving $18,000 per student. So that's really what we're talking about when we talk about where California ranks in terms of education funding.
Well, and Ben, the shift away from public infrastructure came as the big demographic shift in California happened in the 60s and the 70s.
Right. You could say that the diversity that exists in California schools would mean that we should be spending more money, not less. And I think, you know, not to use the achievement scores, because she makes a very good point, but to use the funding. And when we're so low in funding and we have such a big challenge in our schools, that makes it far worse.
So, gentlemen, we have so many callers on the line. It seems like we should do more programs on this, but I want to make sure that we actually can talk about the real prospects for reform, what you're doing, Ben, what you've been doing, Lenny, for decades. What can we actually do to reform Prop 13 that's realistic and achievable?
Well, what we're focused on right now is just raising awareness and educating voters all across California about Prop 13. Because as Lenny mentioned earlier, a lot of younger voters, according to polling, don't even know what Prop 13 is. And that's actually great for us, because when you tell people that the Walt Disney Corporation is paying 5 cents a square foot for their property, and the average Californian is paying 40 cents a square foot for their property, they think that's outrageous and they want to change it. This is a common sense reform, and the more that our organization is able to get out there and talk to people, knocking on doors, talking to people on the street about this every day, the more we're enlightening people, and they're saying, wow, what can we do to change this? Because Prop 13, you've got to hand it to the Howard Jarvis folks, it has a great name, brand, and recognition, and they've done a great job in 36 years of making sure people are focused on the residential side, and they don't even realize that the commercial side is also protected by Prop 13.
So you think a lot more public education needs to be done?
A lot more public education. You know, like I mentioned, we have a campaign to get school boards and city councils to pass resolutions. That's educating people, raising awareness. Being on shows like this is very important because we get our message out to people, because that's what it is. It's a common sense reform that people understand and support. And once we continue to build on this and build on this, we can certainly get an initiative out there that can get, you know, 50% plus one of Californian support.
And Lenny, what do you say to people who might be suspicious of reform of Prop 13, who believe that the protections for homeowners are really important?
Well, the protections for homeowners in any discussion, not just for homeowners, but because of, for various reasons, it should also be for renters. Residential property needs to continue those protections. what my goal is, and thank you for acknowledging I've been doing this for a long time, and I couldn't be happier right now because there is really a movement for change that's building. Ben's group is one of those. There's a lot of groups around the state that are in motion and saying, oh, you know, it's hard to sustain a movement for long-term change, but it looks like we're able to do that. So there are a lot of people around the state are saying we need to look at commercial property tax reform. Non-residential is the term of art. And it can be, and one of the goal I have, and I think Ben is getting there too, is really to open the discussion. The Amiano bill opens the discussion. It doesn't provide the solution at all. It's the, you know, very tip of the iceberg, but it opens the discussion. And the goal is to have a broad-ranging discussion of how damaging, not, and I want to speak to your caller from Santa Cruz, because it turns out that by inflating the cost of land and leading to all kinds of difficulty of new development at the local level, that it's bad for business. The current system is bad for business as well as bad for services and schools. And so my goal is to open up a broad-based public discussion where by the time we get to the legislature next year, we can say it's time for reform. Let's have this discussion in the legislature. If not, you know, then it's a decision as to whether to take it to the ballot and in what form. But I think if we can get this really broad-based discussion that has been stonewalled for years, oh, that's now opening up to really be serious about what are the problems that we face. We have data on every commercial property in the state, and we will let you know. We were trying to educate people about how unfair the current system is, not just to the local government and schools, but
Lenny,
to businesses as well.
We're going to have to leave it there. Lenny Goldberg is Executive Director of Californians for Tax Reform. Ben Grief is Campaign Director for Evolve. We'll put links to all of the information about what they're doing to reform Prop 13 at yourcallradio.org. You can post comments and more information there and continue this conversation. I thank both of you for joining us, and I apologize we couldn't get to all of our calls and emails. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How can men oppose misogyny? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the role men play in ending gender violence and discrimination. Since Elliot Rodger killed 6 people on a misogynist rampage near Santa Barbara almost 2 weeks ago, we've been grappling with the effects of gender-based violence in our society. Last week, we heard many women's stories. Now we'll focus on the socialization of men and boys. What are the most effective ways to help men and boys relate to women as equals? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.